You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
I've been staring at the edge of the water long as I can remember.
This one? Yeah? Okay. Hey, bitches. How's it going? This is our first live podcast. And everybody, this is Samara Ariel as Moana. She is New York City's premier Moana impersonator. Yes, you can make a living doing that. And you do it beautifully. You are a star. And I hope everybody in casting and producing hears your voice and puts you on Broadway immediately. You're incredible. Yeah, thank you for being here, Samara Ariel. I love you. Bye. No, seriously, like we were lip syncing for our lives back there to Samara. And this is my incredible guest, Jessica Vosk.
Hey, you guys. We made it.
We finally made it all the way to WeWork.
That's right.
Now, before we get like too heavy, I want to encourage you all to take out your phones and download the Today Ticks app. It is my favorite way of buying tickets. I enter every lottery through Today Ticks, and you should too. They're my favorite, and they are sponsoring our event tonight because they've got really good taste. So thank you very, very much.
Yes, Today Ticks.
So let's start actually, at the beginning.
Oh, all right.
Oh, wait, you were going to say something.
Nothing. I was just going to also say that like if you, that's how I get most of my theater deals are Today Ticks.
Yeah.
That's all.
They're incredible.
Yeah. Like, I got deep real fast. Okay.
And
anyway.
Today Ticks workers are really attractive.
They're very attractive. You know, none of them play for my team, but they're still very attractive.
And all the more for me.
Yes, that's right.
So you grew up in New Jersey.
That's right, I did. Is this microphone on? Should I? It is?
Yes.
It's so great.
Only the best for you, Jess.
Oh, darling, you know how I feel. I did grow up in New Jersey. I'm sure you've all heard of it. It's right over that little river. Thank you. And I still live out in the Jersey.
Yeah, you do. You love it there.
I love it.
Now, question. When, like, the first time that you sang, did your parents know that you were the second coming? Or, like, because have you all heard Jessica Vosk fucking sing? It's unreal. It's almost offensive how good you are.
Get out of here.
No, but I'm serious. Like, the first, when you were three and you sang happy birthday to someone, were they like, oh, my God, we got to get her an agent to make money?
No, I mean, when I grew up, I loved to sing, and I would sing with my dad in the living room.
Did you have a karaoke machine?
Oh, yeah. Did I ever?
What was your favorite track?
P.S. Well, probably anything from Les Mis.
Got it. Yeah, me too.
Really?
Same.
Cheers. So when I got a karaoke machine, those were back in the days of cassette tapes. Anybody remember those?
Yeah, cassette tapes!
Oh, my God. And I wore my karaoke machine out. And I also thought I was some sort of, like, recording artist because I would listen to my Lord and Savior Celine Dion up in my bedroom. And so I would take a blank cassette tape and put it with, like, a Celine Dion backup track, and I'd record myself singing it. And I'd, like, double it with harmonies. And I'd be like, Mom, listen to this. And she's like, honey, I got one on the phone. Honey. And so I'm sure that's why I came into this business, because I was like, look, listen.
I know. Well, I remember getting mine. It was a wintry Hanukkah evening in San Diego. And my grandparents gave me it, and I thought that I was going to be able to make my own cast recordings. Like, I could tape myself singing Eponine shit.
This is why we're friends.
Yeah. And immediately I was told that the machine does not do that, and I threw my grandparents so much fucking shade. It was one of those, like, thanks, Grandpa. Like, one of those.
Original side eye.
Yeah. But eventually I learned to love my machine. So how the hell did you go into finance? Because that's the fascinating thing about you. Before you did 4 Broadway shows and an album, started writing music in Nashville, you worked on Wall Street.
It's weird. It's weird. What, that's not what we've all done? Well, I grew up, right? Like, I grew up Jersey girl, loved going into the city when I was a kid and going to see Broadway shows. The first Broadway show I ever saw was The Secret Garden.
Garden.
By the way, is that not one of the best scores?
It is.
Still.
Yeah. And I don't condone bootlegs, but there's definitely some on YouTube if you guys watch them.
Oh,
they're
God,
really
it's
incredible.
So good. I saw it when that was like the very first Broadway show I saw. Bitten by the Broadway bug. Grew up singing. Grew up loving to do community theater. I did a balloon festival. Yeah, you're welcome. When I was
a balloon,
like,
festival?
Yeah. And so out in Jersey, like in the Greenlands of Jersey.
They have a festival.
What are you from, New
balloons.
Jersey? Yeah, exactly.
Have
Here
you
we
been
are.
To the balloon festival?
Yeah. Yeah, of course you have to go. We're Jersey snobs. Of course we do.
Of course we go to the balloon festival.
Yeah, the festival.
That's where I'm at Irving. The balloon festival.
So, oh God, nobody's hiring me again. So I would, the balloon festival, which is in, you know, the actual Garden State of New Jersey, which exists, by the way. You know what? This is going to be like a church.
Wait, are we debating whether New Jersey exists or not?
No, we're debating whether, I mean, because there's like, we're going to call it the gaseous part of New Jersey, where it's like, are you, you know, people could be thrown off a bridge. Do you belong to the mob? Does Jerry know Tommy? No.
I'm going to put 2 behind your head and drop you up behind the Camden Aquarium.
That's
that kind of thing.
But also, like, there was a time when when I was going to school up in northern New Jersey, and I worked fine dining, and there'd always be a table of guys that were like, we get there for the 2 o'clock lunch seating. You got to give them whatever they want. They work for waste management. So that's the Jersey I'm talking about. Where I did not grow up. I grew up where the green grass and the balloons flew. And the balloon festival was this thing every year where it's hundreds of thousands of balloons. And something about Hunterdon County, where I'm from in New Jersey, is used to see the balloons. You guys follow me here from Hunterdon County? And I played Peter. This is a long story short of saying I played Peter Pan in the bus and truck day show of Peter Pan. And they flew me in on a helicopter, and the rest is history.
Did they really?
Yeah, I got flown. That's the only time I've ever flown in on a helicopter for a gig.
To the balloon festival.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Yeah, Bernie Telsey, you listening? Come on. And that was like, I just loved to perform. It was just the most awful Peter Pan show ever.
Well,
it
they did awful. Fly you in on a helicopter.
It was an entrance,
something.
And I was fully costumed.
Like Miss Saigon Pan.
That's precisely what
That's
it was.
That's great.
Yeah, but I grew up, I did all the theater stuff as a kid. I thought I wanted to go after high school to college for musical theater. I got into the Hart School of Music at the University of Hartford. I went there as a musical theater major for a semester, and it didn't click for me. Something just didn't feel completely right about it. And I called my parents and said, this just doesn't feel right. I'd rather be going out to auditions in New York City versus sitting in a school for 4 years. And that was just my opinion. I don't bestow my opinion as the only road that works because we work in many roads, see? And thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much. I'm here for the next 40 minutes.
Then back to the balloon
festival. Back to the balloon.
There's a lot to plan this year.
And my parents were like, okay, the one caveat is you have to think about what it is that you want to do. You have to finish school and it can't be musical theater. And I was like, all right, well, I chose a major under the communications umbrella of investor relations and finance at Montclair State University and graduated. I didn't do any theater while I was there, even though they have a great theater program. I didn't do, I think I did the choir. Oh my God, what happened? What happened? Well,
they don't have choirs at the Balloon Festival.
Something happened
so
to me.
Why would you know that?
Wow. I did the la 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 soprano alto tenor bass.
It's like fucking charades.
Oh my God. Oh, it is.
And that's when I did the...
But that's exactly what I just
choir,
did.
Yes.
And every now and then somebody would faint because they locked their knees.
That happened in my elementary school.
See?
And then like during a matinee when I'm like, I'm really tired, what if I lock my knee?
No, they tell you, I swear to God, on Broadway stages to this day, even when I was playing Elphaba and you're on a raked stage, so one leg is naturally longer than the other on that stage because you have to keep your balance. And every time during For Good, I'd be like, am I locking my knees? Is it now? Am I going to go now? Is this the night of my death?
Yeah.
But that's what they used to tell you in choir. Ben, have you ever done this? Inquire when they were like, guys, when you were... No, Ben, not passed out, for God's sake.
We're talking to Ben Fankenhauser, Broadway's darling, and the biggest nilf I've ever met.
That's right.
A newsie I'd like to... Anyway, back to the balloon.
Anyway, but they tell you that. Your choir director will be like, guys, listen, while you are singing O Shenandoah, remember, when you zip your choir robe up, just remember not... to lock your knees because you will get lightheaded and all of the blood will go to your legs. And I swear to God, every single time I'd look to my left and there'd be somebody and she'd be like, oh, Shenandoah. And boom, right down. So anyway, I still did that in college. And
you were like, she didn't fucking listen again.
Yeah. I was like, there was Amy again.
This is why you don't book the Balloon Festival.
I will regret that for the rest of my life for telling him this story.
I'm literally going to change your name in my phone to Balloon Festival.
That's okay. That's okay.
I think it should be your professional name from now on. Like, I want to change mine to Damn Thickness. You know? What? It's a great fucking name.
It really is. It really is. I give it to you. So listen, then I graduate, or I was about to graduate the college, and then I went online and started to apply for jobs because my parents were like, hey, find a job. And I did. I found a job on 42nd and 3rd in the Daily News building for a company at the time called Gavin Anderson, which was an investor relations firm.
God, that sounds difficult.
Yeah, it was.
And I love that you were like, I'm going to do musical theater. No, I'm going to make money.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, and at the time it was a huge learning curve because I came in as a kid, you know, fresh out of college. They handed me a book of Wall Street terms, sent me off to the Bloomberg building to learn about, you know, stocks and bonds and companies and et cetera, to the Reuters building to meet all the Reuters people. I mean, it was like a thing that you did. 8 to 6, bought a lot of suits at Ann Taylor. Thanks, girl. And... It was a real executive job, and
like,
I did.
You
it.
Like secretly sing in the bathroom? On
no,
breaks
that's
and stuff?
That's why I think I had. That's why I think I started to suffer anxiety and panic attacks when I was there because I started to climb the ranks and get my own clients and work in my own specialty areas in that business, and it was a lot of responsibility. And it would be in different time zones where I'd have a client in Spain or a client in San Francisco, and you know, even clients in Texas. That 1 hour will get you, okay? It really will. And I used to travel all the time, and it was just, it was tough, and my body clock was never together, and it was stuff that I was good at, which I think we can all understand. Like, we've all done things that we're really good at, but it's not like we were passionate about them. So I had climbed the ranks in the 3 years I was there at that particular job to promotion after promotion after promotion. And then I'm such a believer of signs and things like that. And I was sitting in my office and I was totally like, had a panic attack, didn't understand where it was coming from, closed my office door, knocked over a piece of paper, and like a little itty bitty piece of paper fell out from my grandmother who had passed away. And it said, "I wish you luck." And I was like, "Well, mama, I have to leave this job." Oh. And so to everyone's maybe not so chagrin, the market crashed in 07, 08. And it was not a good time for the big banks, nor for anybody who had money in their retirement funds. And I remember the market crashing, and I was like, "This is my moment." Oh God! And I just
finally. Yeah,
I was like, "Wow, you know, if there's a time to go, it's now." And so I remember walking into the HR office, and I was like, "Hey, you guys, what's up?" And they were like, "Oh, you know, there's just a lot of paperwork and a lot of shit going on, and we're losing clients, and we've had to cut back on budget." And I remember saying, "Well, are you guys like laying anybody off?" And they were like, "What are you talking about? We just promoted you." And I was like, "Well, I just want you to know that if you had to like let somebody go, I'm your girl." And I'm not kidding you. I swear to God this happened. Her name was Maria. Ask her. Maria Pinto, if you're out there. Because she said to me, "We never had this conversation." But that was the only way I could skillfully get out of the job and still collect unemployment.
That's incredible.
So,
We got some applause back there somewhere.
That's right.
For that.
Someone's in finance.
Like, yeah, fuck the man. Get that unemployment.
And I did. I remember calling my parents and I was like, "Guys, this is not the job for me." And my parents were like, "You are not smart. What will you do?" I'm not kidding.
You are not smart.
Yeah. Well, they're the generation that was like baby boomers. My dad was like, "Look, my parents are both very artistic. But at the time it was like, look, you get a job, you take care of your family. And that's what it is. And you do what you have to do," which they did for myself and my brother. And I think when I came to them and I was like, "I have this great job with benefits and I'm covered and et cetera, et cetera," they thought it was the worst idea ever. They're okay now. They're okay now. My parents are okay now. In fact, my mom, I told her the other day, I was like, "Oh, I'm going to be out in California." She's like, "I'm going to come." So Patty Vosk is fine. But it took some time of like, of really getting my shit together in between careers and figuring out the shift.
Like, I had some sort of idea of what to do. I mean, my resume was total fiction. And, like, I would just go wherever backstage said that there were auditions.
Yeah, yes.
So you were like, "Well, I quit my job."
I was like, "I quit my job." And then I was like, "Who in this office has children that I could babysit?"
Okay.
So, I'd go around and I was like, "Sharon, I just think your twins are so adorable. Do you need a babysitter?" And so I did that. I did that for, like, 6 months to a year. I'm just like babysitting everybody's kids, giving them back. And I had a great time doing it. And then I was doing the moonlighting at Birdland on Mondays, which I still did before I quit my job. I would like wait until 11 o'clock on a Monday night, get my ass over to Birdland. This is before 54 Below existed. Do their open mic night, their cast party, pray to Jesus that Jim Caruso would be like, "And now somebody that I don't know, let's bring her on the stage." And he did it once or twice. And somebody heard me and passed along my name to somebody else. And then I got an email from Paul Gemignani, who is a legend. Yeah.
Paul Gemignani. Do we all know who Paul Gemignani is? Yes, we applaud Paul Gemignani. He is Sondheim's right-hand man. He is everything, and he is hilarious.
He is. He's old school. He's old school Broadway musical director. You don't show up late. You don't show up unprepared. The questions that he asks, you answer them honestly.
Yeah.
And when he emailed me, he said, "Hey, kid, I hear you're a good singer. I'm doing this new show. It's called Christina, and it's by the ABBA guys who wrote Mamma Mia. We're doing it at Carnegie Hall. Are you a soprano? Are you trained? Can you read music?" And I wrote back, I was like, I was babysitting that day. Okay. So I was like, kids, play. And I'm like, typing in the
kids, play. Mama's on the phone.
Yeah. Yeah. Mom's having her cocktail.
Mama's having a sip.
And so I remember getting on the computer and being like, yes, I am a soprano. I actually am classically trained. I do read music. What an honor it would be to be in the room. And he was like, all right, kid, you're going to get a call from so-and-so's office. And so I thought, oh my God, I haven't auditioned in how long? I'm going to get a call. I got to write all this information down. This could be like the thing that gets me to the next thing. And I got the phone call and they gave me all the information about what it paid, when it was, Carnegie Hall, blah, blah, blah. And I said, okay, when's the audition? And they said, no, this is an offer.
No shit.
Yeah. Yeah. And he like threw me in with the wolves.
I mean, if everybody's really quiet and listens really hard, you can hear the screaming of 8 million belters across America. Just angry.
But I walked into a room and like there's a lot of these like people sitting in the room are like seasoned professionals. And I walked in and of course it was my very first gig. So I was just like 18 pencils and a highlighter. And I sat down and I was like a little bit, you know, I was a little bit shaky. I was like, in the stage management, you know, like you're just fine. And you're trying to act really cool. Like, you know, what's going on. They're like, you guys, we're taking a 10. Thank you, 10. Thank you, 10. I mean, it's like, really scary. And he came up and introduced himself and we met and he was like, I'm throwing you this role. I was like, no, I'm ensemble. And he was like, no, but I want you to sing this role. And I was like, I've been hired as ensemble. And he gave me this role out of nowhere and just sort of was like, yeah.
It's like La La Land Live.
It was La La Land Live.
That's amazing.
Twas. It really twas. Now, and, but again, like I worked my ass off.
Yeah.
I just remember, and he kept giving me gigs. He gave me She Loves Me at the Roundabout, uh-huh. That one night gig. Or he would give me these concerts and he would just throw me these things that were difficult where I did Company with the Philharmonic with Neil Patrick Harris. I had to learn that entire score and be, you know, off book and sing it in front of Sondheim. I mean, he did these things for me where it was kind of like, which I believe very much in paying it forward now, where you sit there and you go, this person is giving me all this. Why are they giving it to me? Well, so you can prove that you could do it and that you're able to say, you know, yes, I have the talent. Yes, I can do it. But how hard am I willing to work for it? And I believe that to this day, it's like just because I happen to be in the Green Monster does not mean that in 2 years from now, I'm not going to be babysitting again. That's just what it is. That's the reality of it. So when it comes to like the hustler version of myself, what I had when I first started this career of being thankful and grateful for people taking the chance of hiring me is still what I have.
Well,
now.
I remember when I first met you, we did this production of Man of La Mancha in Houston, Texas.
Yeah.
That was actually like really fucking good and slightly racially insensitive. what can you do? It was a long time ago. But
and we were on stage, by the way. Like, he did it so that our director at the time was like, you know, this takes place in a prison, and we are gonna make this your prison. You cannot leave the stage. And that, remember that?
It's true.
Yeah.
No one left that fucking stage.
I remember.
Stage.
I was like, where do we go to the restroom, sir? And what bucket do I pee in?
They didn't care. They were like, you're in prison.
But that is how we met, indeed.
Yeah. And, but I was obsessed with you from the moment that I met you. You were so kind and also such a hard worker. And I was like, who is this woman? And then we got to New York and it feels like you just immediately booked your Broadway debut in Bridges Over Madison County.
I mean, there was like there was time in between there of me kind of figuring out what I wanted to do, and Paul Gimignani had me audition for Edwin Drood to cover Stephanie Block. And I remember, no, People in the Picture, whatever. He kept bringing me in, and he wrote me an email, and he was like, "You were the best singer in the room. You're the best mover in the room. You have to get your ass to an acting class." And I had never gone to an acting class. And I remember after getting that email, I was like, I'm never acting again. I don't ever want to go into another audition room. Yeah. Nobody understands me. And then I finally, I swallowed my ego for a minute. And I was like, well, Jess, you've never been to an acting class. So why don't you just take his advice? Because he's not trying to be an ass. He's trying to tell you what to do. So I did that. And from there, it led to more and more opportunities to get into the room. And then somebody happened to remember me at a casting session from a casting years beforehand and happened to pull my headshot out for the Bridges of Madison County and say, let's bring her in and see what happens. And I booked it.
Where were you when you got the phone call?
I was in my old apartment, and I got the phone call from my agent at the time, who was like, how would you feel about making your Broadway debut in the Bridges of Madison County? And I was like, ew. No, I was really excited about it. And then I remember the first phone call. I'm like, who are you going to call? I wanted to call my parents, who were on vacation at the time in some island somewhere. I remember calling them, and they were like, hey, honey, hey, what's up? And I was like, I'm going to make my Broadway debut. They're like, what?
Father's drunk.
Yeah,
what?
I mean, it was a moment I won't soon forget, because it took me like 3 hours to tell them what was going on. but the moral of the story is I was so excited. And that experience, both with Bart Scheer and Jason Robert Brown, kind of opened many doors.
Yeah.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
It's incredible. The show was incredible.
It was such a beautiful show.
It closed way too soon.
Did anybody see it?
It was so absolutely stunning.
It was beautiful.
So how was that, your first time on Broadway, and you have one of those experiences where just the show, the life of the show is short?
Oh, it was strange, because as a first part, I was a swing, so all of my time was spent off stage because I covered a lot of the women in the show.
You went on a bunch.
Oh, yeah. So I didn't really know what that process was. I had never swung before. I will let you know now that I will never do it again, because I'm awful at it. It's the hardest job on Broadway. I'm awful at it. In fact, I would sit back there and I would think that I was writing down everything that each character was doing, and then I had to go on, and the dance captain had to push me around and follow me on stage, and he was like, you stand over there, and I was like, who am I?
He's like,
I am not good. It is not a job for Jess. But the learning process, again, it's like if somebody opens the door for you, you better run the F through it. So it came down to, I covered a principal role who was played by Whitney Basher, who I love so much. And she's such a dream.
She's incredible.
And she was out, and it was a planned out, and I was going on, so I had my family come. And then last minute, what I didn't realize is that Jason decided to conduct that night. And
stop it.
Isn't that crazy?
Stop it.
And so I guess the New York Times was in doing an article, and he was like, I'm going to conduct that evening. And that was how he and I kind of really bonded.
Yeah.
And have worked together ever since. And then Bart and I did Fiddler Down the Road. So it's kind of like you all of the relationships in your regular life where you decide who your friends are, and you you go through your life in different circles, and people will stick and want to be around you for who you are. I feel like that's how Broadway works too. It's sort of much smaller than we think it is, because the rooms that we walk into, you'll see the same people over and over again. And you'll see teams of creatives hiring the same people, whether or not they're creatives or actors or stagehands or designers. They'll still hire that team because they become family.
Well, because putting up a Broadway show, what a lot of people don't realize is that it's a bloodbath. It is oftentimes, and I'm not
negative
even
Nancy
kidding.
Over here. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, like it, you know, it can go great. It can go terribly.
It's true.
And it can be a combo of both. You know, it could be emotionally damaging and, you know, financially
yes.
rewarding.
It sure could.
We don't know any shows like that, do we?
No,
we don't.
No.
So our circles cross back together during Finding Neverland.
Indeed they do. Indeed they do.
But you like got one of the first lifeboats out of there, right? So you could. What? You know who I used to work for. He doesn't work anymore.
No, it's true. It's true. The first phone call, I was like, I gotta go, guys. Bye. No. You know what? The thing that I'll say about it, I made some of my best friends.
Some of my best friends.
Through that opportunity, because you know when like shit hits the fan and it's like you're in a naked and afraid situation and you're like, where am I going to go to cover myself? It's like we became each other's like little covered leaves, like yeah. floating in the wind of like, because that was a very difficult show to put up on Broadway.
Yeah,
I remember we were in previews and we were just like, we were working our asses off. We were so exhausted.
We had a different opening number every day.
Every day. And it kept changing. And then I remember like a process of us being in previews, which you know that you could rehearse a show during previews. You could rehearse 1 to 5. You get a little din-din. And then you do the show. But because, you remember this? Of all of the changes to the opening number that somebody wanted to have happen, they put us in overtime, 10 to 1, 1 to 5. For a week.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Oh,
and
yeah.
I will say, Kelsey Grammer showed up out of solidarity,
yeah.
which was
He's
really sweet of him.
Man.
He's a good egg. But that was a tough, I learned a lot.
Yeah, dude. Well, one of my favorite stories was they decided at the very, very last minute, the dog in the show used to be played by a human.
Did you know that?
Well, originally it was Thane, and then it was Cunliffe.
Phenomenal, by the way.
Yeah, both phenomenal. Then one day, Colin gets to work, and there's a massive dog on stage. And they're like, Colin, will you go get in your Porthos costume and come to stage, please? And they compared them together. And that's
you guys, it was literally RuPaul's Drag Race of dogs.
Yeah.
A human and a real dog. And it was like auditioning against each other. You know, like...
You know, to play a dog?
Yeah.
The hilarious thing is that they didn't hire the guy who trains all the Broadway animals.
That's right.
They were like, no, we're not going to... There's no Groupon for that. But I did just find an animal sanctuary somewhere up north, and they've got dogs.
Yeah.
So they brought in these dogs that have never been on stage. They've never been trained. And they have this woman named Bambi as their trainer, who Bambi is this short woman with a voice like this. And Diane would get on the god mic and be like, Bambi, Bambi, can you have the dog look at Matthew? And Bambi would go, no, he's a dog. He's a dog. What do you want him to do? He can't do that. He's a dog.
No, every time, I swear to you, every time the dog needed to be somewhere where it was like, oh, look, the dog's over there. The dog would come on stage and it would be ass. It would just be ass out to
or
the audience.
Or the dog was like supposed to run on stage. He would peek out the wings and then turn around and run off.
Yeah, or the dog, he would have to go from stage right just to center stage. And that mofo would walk all the way off to stage left. Honestly, without fail. And that, I mean, those are the fun theater moments where you're like, okay, bye.
Okay.
See. And there was just Matthew.
Anybody else miss Colin?
Yeah, I sure did. And Colin was like, the nicest guy. They were like, we're going to use the real dog in his dog costume. He was like, okay, thank you so much.
Am I still in the show?
Yeah,
and he was. They let him
He was. But poor Matthew had to put dog treats in his pocket in order to get the dog
to stay. I was covered in fucking, not just dog treats. We're not talking like Petco. We're talking like you go hunt a bear and stick your hands in its guts. And like, that's how you get the dog to come. And because I had to do tricks with the dog until they cut it.
That's right.
because the dog couldn't do tricks.
I know, but meanwhile, like, as the dog is on stage as a real dog, then we have a roller skating bear.
Yeah, a roller skating bear. That was Colin.
It was Colin. And now here we are full circle.
Yeah.
So every Broadway show is different.
Yeah.
That one we learned a lot. And, like, really, I will take bonding from that.
Oh, bonding. I think I learned how to laugh the most with that group of people.
Yeah.
You know, because I was like, at the end of the day, it's a musical. We're not stopping ISIS with a, you know, vortex tornado of glitter. Like, it's God, just wasn't a
that
musical.
But that glitter tornado was
could
pretty
really
damn,
fuck up ISIS.
That, what'd you say?
Nothing. Being an idiot.
That glitter tornado.
It was beautiful.
Because, like, what was, what did we used to sing to it? It was like,
I'll never forget.
Yeah, but what I used to call it.
You just close your eyes and come to ten. And toten them. Yeah, that's all
you
I remember.
You find where you are if you do something you done in your heart.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh.
Thank you. Thank you.
No, but we used to call it because people would come see the show and we'd be like, oh my God, I want to see that glitter vortex. And I was like, glitter tornado time. Oh, that's like just what I would call it all the time for people to come and see the show. And then that ended. Or I got out of that show.
Yeah, no,
it
then
ended.
You went to Fiddler on the Roof.
I did.
Where you were dead Elphaba.
Yeah. Yeah, who knew that hashtag...
I did.
You did you?
As soon as I started watching your videos of Frumacera being dead off of us, I was like, oh, you just booked Wicked on Instagram.
And thus is the power of social media.
No, but... and you also became, I think, one of the greatest Elphabas of all time.
That's very kind of you to say. I really did have a great time.
Well, you did it for 2 years.
I did.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
I don't know many Elphabas that have gone 2 years without going into a special home.
Well, you know, I was pretty close there at the end. But, but I'm really...
Yeah.
But it's hard. It's a really difficult role. I mean, everybody talks about how hard it is vocally, but it's a 2-hour, 45-minute show. And, you know, you're the person on stage for almost that entire show. You learn, oh my God, when people are like, what did you learn the most? You're like, you really learn how strong you are and how capable you are as a human being, when you're like, I'm so exhausted, I could not possibly do it, but you're like, no, I have to do it. And you do. And which is kind of like the Broadway experience sometimes. It's really hard. And on top of the paint and the makeup and the accolades and the costumes and all that kind of stuff, the story's amazing and gorgeous and relevant. And that's why I think it stayed open. It's like, look, nobody wants to be the only different one that gets
I know.
Ridiculed.
Aren't we all Elphaba? I mean, I know a few Glendas, but
yeah,
like,
yeah. But
I'm
are we friends
Elphaba.
With them? Okay.
No.
Yeah. Like, no. My point is, like, whenever anybody would ask me what I related to, it was like, you know, I remember what it was like to be in grade school or high school and have somebody just bully the shit out of me for a while. And you don't feel like you can do anything about it. And it's not like you want to talk to anybody about it because it's embarrassing. And you...
Yeah, well, also, we didn't talk about that kind of shit back then.
No, of course not. Of course not. Either you were, you know, the one getting made fun of or you were doing the fun making. Yeah. And that was... That's at least what my experience was. And it was like, oh, you're a theater kid. Or you're, you know, you're not a sports person. And that's, like, where I grew up. And... To be able to tell a story of somebody on stage where you're the only one that's painted green on stage in a sea of human beings who are bullying you on stage, it's like, you know that it's fake because half of these people are your friends anyway, off stage. But while it's happening, it really sucks. It really sucks to be the only person who's different. So I tried to, at least for a lot of the people coming to see the show, whether it was their first time, if it was like somebody who was there 50 times, if it was a grandmother bringing her grandchild for the first time, everybody could leave there going, either I just had a cathartic experience that healed me from X, or wow, I'm going through something like that right now where somebody that used to be my friend isn't anymore, and now I feel like I know what to do about it. Or it's just like, wow, I can really relate to that. Thank you so much for putting something like that on stage. That's why I do what I do, in hopes that it will help show people that it's okay to be exactly who you are. No apologies. It's taken me a long time to get there.
Same here. I mean, I'm still working on it.
Every day.
We all are.
Every day.
You know, it's a life in process.
Every day. It's like half of the time I think I suck and I can't do it. And then, or like, you know, you have imposter syndrome where you're like, I'm a total hack. Why am I doing this? Nobody should ever buy a ticket to see me perform. Mm-hmm. And then you get to do what it is that you love instead of crunching numbers behind a table. And you realize where the gratitude comes from in that I know how lucky I am to be here. I know how hard I worked to get where I am, but I don't take any of that for granted.
Yeah.
Because it could all go away.
Yeah. Yeah. It's absolutely true.
Yeah.
Everybody's like, yeah, it can all go away.
No, I was going to be like, this is so Dr. Phil. This is very,
I know, right?
Yeah.
Oh, God, doctor. So what's the worst thing that happened in your childhood?
No, but you guys, now that we're on this, I was walking to get myself some dinner before I came here. And this girl was walking, at least like, she was walking toward me a block away. And she was in her 30s. And this is what I call like the overheard in New York. She walked past me and she was on the phone. And this is what she said. She was like, well, maybe if you treated me differently when I was 12. And I was like, I felt so awkward. So now that we're all in a therapy session together,
no.
I wish that she was here too.
I would have been like, sorry, Josh, I'm out. I got to follow this woman and find out what happened.
I was like really, really deep. But I feel like we could go there.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I mean, so starring as Off of Up for 2 years, you still found time to make an incredible album.
Yay.
Called Wild and Free.
Yeah.
It's remarkable.
It was so, I had such a fun time making it.
It's like, and I'm not religious, it's like if King Baby Jesus took a nap in your eardrum.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right, I'm using that.
That's
shit.
That's how good. P.S. Your Wikipedia says that it's easy listening, and I disagree. I know.
I didn't realize it did say
it
easy.
It said, like, music style, easy listening. And I was like, nah.
You're like, no, that bitch is hard.
She's amazing.
Yeah. Didn't you hear Woke the Fuck Up?
Yeah, no, everybody, she's crazy.
Yeah, she's explicit.
Yeah. Yeah, did you hear about Jessica Voss? She's like the musical theater Eminem. Yeah. She's crazy good. Yeah.
Wow, easy listening. Ew, who put that up there?
I don't know.
That's like me, elevator music, and Sade.
Was like, I think there's a difference between Vosk and Kenny G.
Yeah,
they're both wonderful.
I can't play the, what is it, clarinet flute. What does he play?
I don't know, but I'm sure he'll be playing it in Chicago at some point.
I'm sure he will,
you know,
too.
Like for 2 weeks only, Kenny G.
In the role of Roxy Hart.
Billy.
I would actually watch it.
Absolutely.
No, I had a good time making the album. A lot of amazing people were a part of the album. Like Robbie Roselle helped me out with it. Mary Mitchell Campbell helped me out with it. I had Marty Thomas and Marissa Rosen as my background vocals, and they're like little aliens. And
so are you. It's so good.
Well, thanks. I don't like to skimp on the good shit when I can sit there and actually devote my time to something. And I think albums are, I had never made one before, and I think obviously it's a reflection of who you are as a performer and a person. And for me, it's like I don't live my life in jazz hands of just like Broadway performing. You know, I grew up with rock and pop and Joni Mitchell and Crosby, Stills, Nash, and that's like what my background was. And I wanted to honor the Billy Joel, Elton John,
hell yeah,
you know, Bonnie Raitt's of the world. And then, you know, half of the Broadway people or the Broadway kids who didn't know the Bonnie Raitt song on there. It's like half of the adults who didn't know Million Dreams or, you know.
I didn't know it, and I thought that you wrote it. I was like, oh, Jess wrote a great song. Then I said,
he
Dwayne
did. He
Reed.
Texted me. He was like, and then I heard it at Dwayne Reed.
Yeah,
I was like,
I was
just
like,
covered
Jessica. This isn't
song.
Jessica. And yeah, that's how I learned.
Yeah.
Not very cool. But what did making this album teach you?
How much I love being in a studio.
Yeah.
How much I love producing, putting musicians together, sitting there listening to what works and what doesn't work. It just, that's like another version of life that I'd like to have.
Well, somebody, like I've known you for so long, and music is something like literally that lives inside of you. It's like its own being inside of you. It's
I just love
that
it
you
so much.
Connect with.
Yeah, I mean, you ever listen to a song that sticks with you, or it's like, you know, you stick with smells. Like, I will never forget when I traveled to Europe when I was in high school. I met Andy, who I loved, from South Jersey because he wore Burberry. And that is, like, how I feel about songs, is that there's a certain place that I heard it. There's a reason I connected to it. It makes me feel about that one time that I broke up with that guy, and it was the worst year of my life, and that song got me through my life. And, like, that's what I would love to be able to bring to people who say, I loved listening to your album, and this song got me because it's a life experience that's very universally shared for everybody. And there's nothing to it except for listening to music. Mm. It doesn't cost you anything. It doesn't, you know.
Sure.
And that's a beautiful thing to me.
Did that inspire you to want to go to Nashville and
start writing? Yeah. I mean, I met Alison Krauss at an event that she and I did together at Lincoln Center last year. I was such a huge fan of hers. We shared a dressing room, and I remember walking in and being like, I love you. And she was like, hey, like, look at my purse. It's a Ziploc bag. And I was like, we're going to get along great. And so she and I became really fast friends, and I started to visit her down in Nashville. And the last trip I had, her son and I wrote a song together. And I think I'll go down there again in December and just meet with a couple of people down there. And she's been so integral in kind of helping me. And she's been the one who's like, put this song on your album, or now you should be writing. And
I just want to go with you as your assistant. I don't do anything, but like, I just want to sit there and watch and listen.
It's really amazing. I was very scared of it because I've been so used to like the Broadway thing, and I know how to do that now. Yeah. And then you go into this whole other world where, you know, Nashville is its own entity of, it's a music city, and that's what it is. And that's where you go to listen to music or listen to new music or new bands, and people get together for writing sessions. And I remember somebody, when I was down there, they were like, do you want to have a writing session? And I was like, definitely, yeah. Yeah, I love it, definitely. And I showed up, and I was so scared. I had no idea what the hell a writing session was, and it really is just two people, and they're like, so, like, where do you live? And then you just write shit.
And then you're like, on the hills of home of Jersey, balloon factories, balloon teardrops. Something like that? No.
That is the song I wrote. That is exactly the song I wrote.
Yeah, I figured.
Yeah.
So you just finished starring in the pre-Broadway production of Finding Nancy, which
It's becoming Nancy.
Yes. Finding.
It's like same finding, tomato, tomato. Finding for Guffman. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
And during this, I think you came up with a really important decision for yourself that I'm really proud of you for doing, because you just went to Los Angeles, correct?
I did. And, you sure did.
You know, please tell us about your experience, because I don't think enough people talk about this subject, and I think it's important for people to know that they're not alone.
Yeah, and that is working in television. No, I'm just kidding. No.
And that is doing co-stars, not guest stars.
I decided, because I'm so career-focused right now, and I just don't ever want to apologize for the fact that, you know, we can work for what it is that we want to. And because I made my Broadway debut at age 30, you know, I'm not yet in a walker and in a geriatric home yet. And so I decided to freeze my eggs out in LA, because it was something that I heard a lot of people talking about. It was something that I heard a lot of women saying, you know, there is no right time to like have a kid. And I was putting so much pressure on myself because I'm 36 now. And I was like, oh my God, like Bumble. Match. And no, I'm serious. Like I was down in Atlanta, and I was like there for 3 months, and I was like, okay, guys, how many dinners can we get through? Who am I marrying?
Till I get a baby.
Till I find a baby. And so I just like, I bit the bullet. I decided to go out to LA, work with this great fertility center, and found out that, like, when I posted about it or when I was very public about it, the amount of people who got in touch with me who either have been through it or are trying to go through it or are planning to go through it or had questions because they're scared to talk about it was pretty amazing. And all in all, it's maybe like a 3 week to a month process out of your life, which is also very scary because you are jam packed full of hormones and a short temper. And I, you know, the worst of it though is like a Lush employee tried to come up to me and ask me if I needed help. And I was like, no, Amanda, I don't. And so I mean, that's a that's a true story. It really happened.
I don't.
And she was like, "That moisturizer is so good." I was like, "Believe you? I believe you." And that's the day I knew. I was like, "Mama can't go out until she gets these eggs out."
This is made out of organic volcano. I'm gonna kill your family.
Seriously. And that's what I said to my girlfriend out in LA. I was like, "Okay, gotta have the surgery now. Time for these babies to come out." Anyway, my point is, it was so super easy, and the pressure now that you know. They took the eggs out, which I got 20 eggs. That's like a really good number.
That's
of eggs,
like a Jurassic Park amount of eggs.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
great.
If now I'm, yes.
Call that's me, like a Jumanji amount of
eggs. It's very Mother
eggs.
Goose. Yeah. It is very Mother Goose.
It's like you roll the dice and it's like 20 eggs.
And honestly, it's like, they tell you these things. They're like, "Oh my God, Jess, you're 36 years old. You're basically on your deathbed of eggs."
Oy.
And then you get in there and they're like, "Whoa, there's so many in there." You're like, "Okay, don't lie to me." So they took them out. Thank goodness I got back a few days ago. The recovery process is not as pleasant as one would hope, because it's like you still got to get all the hormones out of your system because your body has no idea who it is anymore. But I will say, like, I'm so happy that I did it as an investment for the next like 5 to 10 years of my life, so that I don't have to worry as much about should I take this job or should I go to this place or should I take 6 months out of the year and try this. It was a helper. It was a helper. So my whole goal for doing it, besides insurance for myself, was to show people that it's not as taboo or crazy as you might think it is.
Yeah. Well, I'm really proud of you.
Thanks, friend.
I love you so much.
I love you more.
You inspire me, and I know that you inspire so many other people. And no live show would be complete without a song. Will you please sing for us? Good, because we hired an accompanist. Everybody, this is Rob Ouellette. He is absolutely incredible. You may have seen him in one of 4 international tours of 42nd Street. So when you were in Shanghai and checked it out, you may have seen him.
It's pretty amazing, Rob.
It really is.
Honestly.
You're amazing.
No, you're amazing.
I know.
Let's give it up for Josh. Come on.
Thank you very much.
This wasn't scripted.
No.
Are you going to sit right here?
Sure.
No, I want you to sit
gonna
here.
I'm going to go right
no,
there.
No, no, okay.
Yeah, I can.
Yeah, no, I love
okay,
it.
Okay, great.
Yeah. Hit it, Rob.
Something bouncy, would ya?
This is from...
Mike Change, Broadway podcast, Mike Change.
He's so good to... Oh, with a... See?
What happened?
I love the reverb.
Oh, that's right, reverb.
Oh, okay. Thanks, Rob. Help, I need somebody. Help, not just anybody. Help, you know I need someone. When I was younger, so much younger than today, I
Jessica Vosk! Woo-hoo! Oh my God! And the incredible Rob Ouellette. Oh my God, is she not incredible? I love you. And you know what, I love all of you. Thank you so much for coming out to our first live event. Thank you to TodayTix for making us the most fashionable event of the season. Thank you, Samara, for being the greatest Moana in the world.
Josh.
Oh, hold on, my fucking producer wants to say something. What?
I know we are out of time, but I want to. You have been in this event all night. You, crying in it on every word. Can I give her a chance to ask you one question?
Yes.
I don't know. My name is Brenna. I'm an actress. I moved here like about a year ago, and I used to work at Ground Central. I used to make cold brews for you. Yeah. Ben is my voice teacher. I just think all of this is amazing, and I just love it, and I just want it so bad. And I, any advice that you have, I guess, is my question. Whatever advice you have, I love all of this.
I say always follow your bliss. Never accept no. When you have a job, be happy to be there. Be easy to work with. And there is a place for you. Compare and despair. We're all in our own journey. It took me 10 years before I got a Broadway show. Just keep going.
I'm willing to wait and work. So thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for that advice. Yeah.
I'm a huge believer in stay in your lane. This is my dance space. This is your dance space. Respect each other. You are going to be seeing each other for a very long time in this business. Make friends. Again, I can't stress how wonderful it is to work with good people, because what I like to say is I can walk into a room and do a really great job, but if the person behind me is nicer than me and they might not even be as talented, or I might not be as talented as the next person, but you will book the job because of your kindness. And you will book the job because of how nice you are in the room and how nice you were to the monitor and how nice you were to the person who got coffee.
Because
those are the people, when they walk in the room, the casting director will say, hey, how was Jessica when you got her that coffee? And if they were like, she sucks, a lot of times they'll be like, well, then we're not hiring her. And that is truly how it works.
I had a lot of side jobs working at auditions and like monitoring and stuff. And then at the end of the day, they'd bring me in the room and say, who was a jerk? And I'd be like, oh, well.
It's truly a thing. It really is a thing. So
yeah.
What I preach about kindness all the time, because I've met enough assholes in my life and come across a lot of people that just didn't want to give me the time of day, and I kept trying to break down walls and doors as much as I could. And I believe that the reason people stick around in this business is because of how wonderful they are to work with and who they are as a human being.
Yeah.
And that's a beautiful thing.
And there's going to be a million no's, but it only takes one yes.
Very true. Very true. Hang in.
We are inspiring as shit.
Oh! And you get a car. And you
and
get
you
a
get
car.
A, and you get a humpback whale. And you get a humpback whale.
And you get a balloon.
All right, everybody. Thank you so much. Continuing listening to Josh Swallow's Broadway. And I love you guys. Bye.
Josh Swallow's. Josh Swallow's. Josh Swallow's. Josh Swallow's Broadway.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Suffs has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com.